this is Susie from Minya Shoes Ministries. It is my pleasure to present to you a new episode of The Next Step with Father Vazgen. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're tuning in. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. The Next Step is the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. Our seventh season is well underway, inspired by our spiritual pilgrimage to both sides of Mount Ararat. Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on Christ's principles of love, faith, and hope. At epostle.net, we reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. We produce these shows free of charge and make them available for download at epostle.net, as well as via multiple podcatchers, including Apple iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, and our very own epostle app. You can also subscribe to receive email notifications every time a new episode is released. However you choose to tune in, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazgen, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 348 of The Next Step. This is a podcast that puts it all together, that connects the dots between the ancient and the contemporary, between the spiritual, the emotional, and the physical. In fact, we look at the very fabric of our being through the ultimate lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today. This Armodox look is part of the expanding vision of the In Issues mission. And if you're ready to take it, I know I am. Let's take the next step. Hey, so good to have you with us today. It is February 5th today. It happens to be a very special day, I'll tell you in a minute, but it also happens to be in the middle of winter, and you'd never know it. Here in Southern California, I am broadcasting from Epostle West, our Glendale studios, and I'm looking out the window, and it is gorgeous. Okay, I'm not gonna slip you into the sin of envy, you know, but I gotta tell you, it is just beautiful over here. And this morning on my walk, I saw one of those cartoon mornings, you know? You know how you see, like, in the cartoons, they show the sun goes down and the moon comes up? Well, it was just like that. I was walking on my walk, and there it was. The moon was setting on one side, and the sun was rising on the other side. And yeah, that tells you it is the midwinter.
I see them running with their tails hanging low, like dogs in the midwinter.
The dogs of midwinter, of course. Puxitawny Phil came up and he saw his shadow, or he didn't, but he did tell us that there were six more weeks of winter. But we knew that, didn't we? We knew that. We knew it was six more weeks. But anyway, I am so glad you're with me today. Whether it is cold where you're at, whether it is hot, just take a few moments right now to kick back and relax. And of course, if you're relaxing while you're driving, be extra careful not to fall asleep. Anyway, we have a great show for you today. I have with me a guest, Gregory Baylor, and he's going to be coming up in the second portion of our show talking about the installation, about the 100-year journey. That's going to be fascinating. I know a lot of people have been writing about it, have been asking me questions. Well, you're going to hear it right from the artist himself. But before that, let me start off with a very special birthday wish and a very happy birthday cheer for our dear friend, Susie Shatarevyan. Yes? Happy birthday, Susie! Our dear producer today turns, I won't tell you her age, because she looks forever young, and she is. She is. I always call her a child anyway. But she's taken the day off. She's not in the studio with me, but true to her form of being this incredible producer, she did promise me that if I get this file to her in time, she will produce it. So you are going to have this podcast, as we have for the last 7 years, delivered to you right on before the clock strikes midnight. Okay. For Thursday, okay? It always comes out on Thursday. I know you guys in down under in Australia, I know you've already head over to Friday, but that's okay. Okay, you know what I'm talking about. You're going to get it in time, thanks to Susie. But I do take this opportunity to wish her all the best. You know, in Armenian, her last name means sunshine. Isn't that so appropriate? Sunshine Shatarev, it means much, much sunshine. And we wish her only the best. We wish her all that sunshine in her life. And so appropriately, Susie Sunshine, I did say from Down Under, I got a really interesting email from Down Under, from Sydney, Australia, from Laura, who told me that, you know, last week we talked about Pope Francis's writings between heaven and earth, or on heaven and earth, actually. A very fascinating book, and I shared with you some bits and pieces of that, and I do want to share some more with you in the coming weeks. But she did alert me that His Holiness Karekin I of blessed memory, who was the Catholicos of all Armenians between 1996 and 1999, a very short-lived Catholicosate, but during that time very impactful in his writings and his teachings. And he does have a book called Between Heaven and Earth, which we will quote as well. I mean, it is fascinating. But today, at least, I want to just acknowledge that this goes hand in hand with the other Pope Francis book, and we will definitely have a link on our show notes. So look forward to that in the coming weeks. And thank you, Flora, for that heads up on that one. I do also want to thank all of you who've been writing in about the memorial tribute that we did to Johnny Bilezikjian. We did have his funeral service, his Hulharga Vorutyun. I always want to make this very clear. In Armenian, that word, Hugarga Vorutyun, is very important. It's not a finality. It's not as final as a funeral. It just means sending the soul back to his maker. And that's what we did. Last Saturday, we got together, and it was a packed church with a lot of people who Johnny, with his life, with his music, had touched, and it was a very fitting tribute to a very special artist. And I do want to say thank you very, very much for the wonderful comments that we got on that tribute that we did a couple episodes back. It was very heartfelt, and I think you know that it came from the heart. He touched us. He touched us in many, many ways, and surely his music lives on. Now, also, I wanted to tell you that, you know, at the funeral service, the Huarga Vorutyun, it's kind of interesting because, you know, when life has been lived so fully, and I know it ends a little bit too quickly, and those are our standards, and we're never satisfied. I always wonder, you know, do you ever get satisfied? You know, if somebody lives on to the ripe old age of, let's say, 90, 95, 100, you know, could you say that, okay, well, he's had his share? No, life is sweet, and you wouldn't mind living an extra day, an extra 2 days. And so when life is taken away in the 60s, as it was the case for Johnny, it's difficult to come to terms with that departure. But it was such a beautiful tribute in that it was a celebration of his life and his work. And I did get a chance to meet so many people. And one man in particular, I do want to mention him. His name is Von Mesrobin. Came up to me and he said he wanted to meet me because he runs the Armenian radio program in Detroit, Michigan. May not be Detroit, it was in Michigan. I did open up the website, and it's a long-running show that he has over there. But the reason why he wanted to meet me was because he uses some of our material, some of our messages on his radio program. Oh, you know, I'm honored. I'm humbled, too. You know, it's like, it's wild. You know, and I'm saying this because, you know, we put together this podcast every week, and, you know, we've been doing it for several years now. Sometimes you sit in front of this microphone and you say, is there anybody listening? Who's out there? And it's like, you know, you never know where it's going to end up. who's listening, who's taking bits and pieces, who's rebroadcasting, who's retweeting your messages. So it's kind of like a wild experience. And I was truly humbled when he came up to me and he said, you know, I wanted to meet you because I use some of your messages. I've shared it with my listeners there in Michigan. Wow, you know, I'm truly honored. I want to thank you. Thank you, Vaughn, for sharing that with me. And to any listener that's out there, hey, thank you for all the comments that you do send in. It keeps us going, you know. It is a lonely experience on this side of the microphone. So when I hear things like that, I like to just do a shout-out and thank you, definitely. It was a rather sad occasion losing someone like Johnny. But, you know, when you saw the love, when you saw the creativity, when you saw people coming out and sharing their stories, their bits and pieces, you realize that, like I said a few minutes ago, you know, life doesn't end there. And certainly his music does live on and it keeps us going. Okay, today I've got Gregory Baylarian with me. I've been sharing with you the story of the 100-year journey. And for the last several weeks, we've been talking about, because, you know, ever since the new year, 2015, this is kind of a pivotal year in life, not just in Armenian history, but in just life history. When you look at what's going on in the world, and there is a quest for peace, isn't there? People are just kind of fed up with what's going on. And it seems like the only thing that we can answer back with is yet more violence. And our metaphors, everything that we do. I mean, we saw it this week, right? There was the incident that happened in that ISIS pulled off, okay? They beheaded a Jordanian, and Jordan, King Abdullah got up and he says, okay, we're going to retaliate, we're going to kill two of your nationalists, you're going to kill two of your people that we have as prisoners, and then you see the next scene on the news, the ambulance is coming out of the Jordanian prison, and we're going to be bombing, and basically the only way to get rid of violence, we believe, is by yet more violence. And he who has the biggest guns, he's the one who's going to win at the end. And I've been sharing with you this message that this message that we found, as I've shared with you in the past, this pearl. You know, Jesus says when the kingdom of heaven is like that merchant in search of a great pearl. And when he finds that pearl, he sells everything that he has just to obtain that pearl. It is of such great value, such great beauty. And that's how I am right now. You know, we found this pearl. And this pearl is peace. This pearl is the beauty of the world, that there are other metaphors that we can latch onto to answer hatred, to answer violence. And it is a message of peace that comes out of that. So the 100-year journey that we're going to be sharing in a few minutes with the artist, you know, began with this idea of, like, we're returning back to the homeland and we're going to find something there. We didn't know what. What we did find, we found a message of peace, a message of hope. And we want to share that with the world. So I have artist Gregory Baylarian with me today, and we're going to be sharing those ideas right after the song of the day. Now, every week I pick out a song. Now I'm picking out a beautiful song today. It is by Bambir, and the reason I'm picking them out today is because Gregory and I, we had a great experience last summer when we were in Armenia. We had a chance to get to a club where Bambir was playing. I only lasted about 10 minutes. I think Susan and I moved. We made it about 10 minutes in that club, but Gregory made it till the morning time, and it's an experience. One day we'll talk about it. But here is Bambir off of their Quake album, and I believe this is the older Bambir. There's two versions of the Bambir group. This is the older group. This is dedicated to Gomidas. Gomidas, one of the silent victims of genocide. Silence in the sense that he was driven to madness, having seen the genocide of his people. He died in 1935, about 20 years after the genocide started, but definitely a prolific musician, writer, who changed the course of Armenian music, Armenian spirituality, and Armenian culture in general. Anyway, here is Bambir off of their Quake album. Enjoy. Bambir, a tribute to Gomi Das, called Gomi Das itself. Did you like that? Yeah, beautiful. You know, this is like Armenian folk music with a Celtic twist. And I wanted to play that especially because, you know, I've shared with you many times about the similarities. And I don't know what it is, but Bambir, a couple of years ago, came out with a CD called Armenian Scotch. And it resonated in my heart because I've shared with you many times the similarities of the music, whether you look at the duduk and the bagpipes and the double reeds that are used in both of those instruments. And then you look at some of the places such as Karahunj and then Stonehenge, you know, and you've got these similarities in music, in landscape, in the places, in the history. Anyway, that is a discussion for another day. I hope you enjoy it. This happens to be the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, and on this occasion, we are producing an art installation that will be opening April 15th and running through till April 24th. And let me tell you, if you have any plans of coming to Southern California, this is the time to come. Please try to make it to this. Put it down on your calendar. It is going to be opening at the Zorayan Museum, which is at the Western Diocese headquarters, underneath the St. Leon Cathedral, a very sacred space. And it will be a transitional space. There's so many dimensions to it. I could go on to it, but it's for that reason that I called in the artist, Gregory Baylor. And yes, you have heard him here before. You've enjoyed him in the past, and I know you will today. I have the great honor to call him a friend, and I'm so glad he's with us today. So let's switch over the microphone and listen in. Greg Baylarian. He is the artist who is putting together this installation, The 100-Year Journey. And I've spoken a lot about it. And today I'm just really happy he's with us. And he's going to be sharing some of his thoughts. And more importantly, I guess, some of the conversation that we've had, because this is an evolutionary process. It really has come a long way. And first of all, Greg, I'm really happy you're with us today. And want to hear a lot about what's going on in your mind as you're putting together this installation. So welcome. And how about if we start off talking a little bit about the installation itself? What is the 100-year journey to you?
Well, thanks, Father V, for having me. And what is the 100-year journey? That's a beautiful question. And it's a question that continues to evolve in my heart. And it's a question that we began asking each other about 2 years ago. Today, what I can say the 100-year journey means to me, it's the installation that we're building for April, which, of course, everybody is invited to, Armenians and non-Armenians. This is really a universal project. It's a universal message. It's an installation designed to provoke thought. It's a project about a genocide survivor, the ancestor of a genocide survivor, myself, and symbolically all of us who are Armenians. It's the story of the return to Armenia and Turkey. Perhaps we say the scene of the crime, to rediscover my own ancestral heritage. In my case, it was my first time. It was the first time for my DNA to return back to the homeland.
Wow. Yeah.
And for many Armenians, it's a first time. And so part of the installation is an expression of that exploration, of rediscovery about where do I come from? What's in the soil of my history? what did my ancestors have to tell me in terms of the wisdom and insight that our nation or our people have had for so many thousands of years. And then on the other level, this installation is a form of an active meditation. Let's call it a space that's being designed for Armenians in particular to be able to go to and offer their prayers, their messages of peace, a moment to bond with and give that moment to those ancestors who didn't make it. You know, there's many events that are being made available to commemorate the 100th anniversary. And, you know, this one, you know, one of the things that for me I found to be very important is an opportunity for me to reconnect not only to my ancestors who didn't make it, but to show a moment of gratitude to the one who beat all odds and had the will and courage and whatever it could possibly have been that allowed them to get through, you know, something so dark and tragic that, you know, it's hard to imagine in our contemporary lives. And I wanted to, you know, a space that could give us as Armenians the opportunity to share in that gratitude for the, you know, the survival of that moment, and a place to honor those who were, you know, the bones that were buried in pits that are at the bottom of rivers and that don't have a grave. And, you know, we always offer the rest in peace experience, and shouldn't we have that, you know, on 100-year moment, a way to, you know, kind of connect with those spirits at this time?
Sort of that RIP, if somebody passes away and you signal out by saying rest in peace, this is like another expression of that, but maybe in a different way, maybe to keep that memory alive beyond just a grave marker, huh?
You know, Armenians are well understanding that, and this is a frustrating issue because of the denialist dilemma that is part of our story. Many Armenians, you know, say that it maintains a level of frustration in the healing process, very understandably so. And this project addresses this as an Armenian because, you know, in speaking about Armenian genocide with Armenians, often we all share in the desire to move forward. And how do we move forward? How can we evolve from this? How do we find empowerment? How do we find justice? And there are many expressions of those answers, and many of us walk with it unanswered. And, you know, this project it has been designed with the aspiration to offer yet a contribution to those questions, and through the kind of messages that will be portrayed there and the kind of ambiance and energy that will be symbolized in this space.
Now you said something earlier about peace, and I think this is where I want to kind of go off in a little direction, because there is an appeal to this installation to people beyond Armenians. And there is a message here. There's an incredible message. And both you and I were part of that journey. We went last summer to the ancestral homes, as well as to present-day Armenia, and, you know, in both areas, and as well as Artsakh. And we found all these spiritual treasures, and they signaled to us this message of peace. I mean, here's a group of people, landlocked, and no military force, no military power, and they've survived. And where do they find this peace? Where do they find this comfort? And I want you to talk a little bit about that peace message, because I think somewhere along the way we came to the conclusion that, hey, if you're against genocide, then what are you for? You're for peace, right? So come into this installation. How does somebody, they walk through the installation, we call it a portal. Where is that message of peace? Where do they? I mean, you've got something as ugly as genocide, and now you're talking about peace.
Right.
How do you convey that message?
Right. How do you connect the two? And that's a great question. And it's was an unexpected outcome of a 2-year long journey. When this project began, essentially under the precipice that we have the 100th year anniversary of the genocide coming around, and this was 2 years ago, we need to think about building some kind of a memorial for it, to do something special for this. How can we address the genocide? And that was a very good question. I did not think at that time, and I did not know where that journey would take me. And unexpectedly, it did arrive at a question about what is peace. And one of the ways that happened was, in part, you refer to the messages left by our ancestors in the form of stone, cut into the stone, carved into the stone, all throughout Armenia. The most extraordinary expression of spiritual symbolism in these khachkars, everywhere you went, you found them. In beautiful highland grassy fields, and there's this just awesome monolithic stone just extruding from the earth with these intricate carvings. Well, what do they mean? And when we would study what they mean, it's almost a mandala symbol, a key, a portal of sorts. And when you study what they tell us these khachkars were designed for, you find out that, in fact, yes, they are not just decorative markers for the land. They are profound mechanisms that connect us through the land and the air to a divine source that resonates a vibration of peace. And the word peace, I feel, falls short. Our late 60s, early 70s movement tarnished the word a little bit for the Western culture because it was associated with tie-dyed, long-haired, you know. We have a little bit of a dilemma, too, because mankind, we are stuck in judgment, right. Unfortunately. And even the word has a bitter taste when you're fighting for justice.
Right.
So how do we use peace? Because many Armenians think that peace means giving up. It means surrender. It means letting go of certain forms of restitution. It's very complicated. But what I realized was it actually wasn't complicated. And the very simplistic truth is that if a man or woman child stands against genocide, then what they're really saying is they are for peace. And I think you have to be an unhealthy mind in today's world to not want a peaceful world to live in. And there's many examples of what's going on in the world today that empowers us to say, I want a peaceful world to live in and for my children to live in.
Right.
And when we understand that that's what peace means, then we start to say, well, then peace is vital to the conversation of genocide, because genocide is the ultimate incarnation of hatred, of prejudice, of persecution because of race or belief. And therefore, if we are against genocide, it means that this installation on some level needs to honor those who were persecuted by giving back to us today what they wanted most. What did they want most in their moment of persecution?
Exactly.
And they must have wanted peace. Thus, I say, in this quest that I'm on for the last 2 years with you, this project doesn't have answers necessarily, but it provokes possibilities for us to think about can we have a movement for justice, which I do believe is important. Martin Luther believed it was important that justice was important, but he also believed in peace and brotherhood. And I think they can coexist, and I think that's an important message. Peace is not a contradiction to the fight for justice. And learning to understand and embrace peace and not... And this is where it gets delicate, because the last thing that I want to do is offend at a space that is designed to offer our ancestors a grace. Therefore, this is ultimately an opportunity for people to provide peace. But it's also an opportunity to say, where am I in my consciousness, consciously or unintentionally, contributing to the contrary of peace? Because this is the dilemma we face as Armenians. We inadvertently teach our children to hate Turks.
Yeah.
And this is, I believe, a displacement of the trauma. And it interferes with our transformative potential to coexist. And this is a very difficult concept to deal with those who have dealt with the blow of such a traumatic tragedy. And yet, it seems that it's an unavoidable component in moving forward, which is what we all want, because we all say we want to move forward. We all say we want to live in a peaceful world, and we all say we're against genocide. So I think we have to ultimately integrate and think about this.
I think sometimes we get into that notion of competition, and there has to be a victor in this. And, you know, we look at victory as, is there some justice? Is there some retribution? When in fact, the ultimate victory is peace, right? If we can, like you said so beautifully, I mean, those people who were dying during the genocide, what was going through their head? I want peace. You know, I do not want to go through this thing. I mean, ultimately, that was the quest. Everyone was after the quest for peace. We this is our land. We want to live here and just exist. You know, and raise our children and take what we can from this life and leave something of ourselves behind. And you can only do that in a peaceful environment, you know, where you're not being thrown out. So the ultimate victory today is not about a justice in terms of the world, but a victory in terms of peace. Can we find that peace that they wanted? And in a sense, we did. I mean, in the areas that we visited, I want to ask you something artistically. You mentioned earlier about the mandala, and can you explain a little bit about what the mandala is? Because we kept seeing that over and over on the khachkars, in the spaces that we were visiting, this circular reflection, and even in the, what was it called, the infinity symbol that we kept coming across, no matter where we went. And it was funny. Do you remember that we went into the museum and there wasn't one reflection of that?
Yeah, that's right.
That was weird, but we saw it everywhere in some of the most ancient places, 5,000-year-old structures, 5,000-year-old
right.
rock formations, and the mandala. Can you explain a little bit about the mandala? What is it? And how does that benefit us? Or maybe talk about it in the terms of prayer that you were earlier.
Sure. And actually, before I get into my interpretation of the mandala in Armenian terms, I would like to just read a quote regarding our Armenian people and the notion of victory, because it's a beautiful quote written by a professor named James R. Russell. This is from 1981 back at Columbia University, but I think it's a beautiful expression by a non-Armenian of Armenian people. And I've done a work of art that symbolizes Vartan, who of course is a symbol both in Armenian culture. Let me read this quote to you. Such a nation is so enlightened, cupped in the very hand of God, that it can never really be defeated. Armenia celebrates in Vartan the victory, not of arms, but of an idea. That idea is the freedom of the spirit, the basis of liberty, of creativity, of thought, and of life. Now, for me, I think he is getting to the potential power of peace and the liberation on all these facets of our consciousness and existence as a result thereof. And I think that helps us to, just to bring closure to the peace component of the discussion, that peace is often misunderstood. And I think what we're trying to say is there's great power hidden in the exploration of how peace can become more a part of our daily lives, in resolving us of not only the storms on the home front, but the larger conquests involving justice relevant to the Armenian cause and the global village that we live in.
And so I think that was so eloquently said. I mean, you know, this is what Vartan was about. This is what that whole story, that's what the 100-year journey is. Yeah.
And let's keep in mind, Vartan is a symbol of one of the greatest Armenian warriors there were. His transformative influence on our culture was had a cross in one hand and a sword in the other. Yet he had a code of honor that is often described in resemblance to that of the great samurai, who had perhaps the, you know, what is usually known as the highest code of honor in warfare. And I think that's an important component to understand about, you know, Armenian nature, and it's even present today. If you see, you'll have to remind me the name of the huge statue in Yerevan, with the woman with holding the sword, and yet it's not pulled from the sheath. Right. And it's this very artistic and graceful expression that, you know, we are a peaceful people. Of course, you know, with a sense of honor about, you know, protection and...
Yeah, that was Mother Armenia.
The code. Yeah, okay. So anyways... Let me not neglect your question you posed on the mandala.
Well, it's more on an artistic kind of basis, because I know it's going to be occurring, and I know our listeners are want to know what this installation is. You know?
So a word that you and I have often described the installation as being, which also often confuses people because people don't generally understand what it means. When we describe this installation as a portal, okay? So what's a portal? What are you talking about? And, you know, the reason why the portal is for us has been an appropriate word, even though it's also one of those elusive concepts. Essentially, the portal is used because what we're talking about, and it's also the same thing as what the mandala does. So when I describe the portal, I'm also describing the fundamentals of how a mandala works. Mm-hmm. A mandala's essentially function is to use visual language in that focuses on the mandala. He unravels in a sublime manner layers of his own consciousness, therefore transcending his spirit, you might call it, into deeper dimensions of awareness. Therefore, Armenians have been utilizing this technique, which is a very profound, I like to use the word mystical, it's deeply integrated with the spiritual heritage of the Armenian people, it came from the Armenian church as the spiritual pillars of a people. It's a very powerful mechanism to aid the physical person into deeper realms of consciousness. And this is what we're talking about when we refer to a portal, because we want this space to be a place in the 2 weeks that it will be open to the public. So it's not very long. So if anyone's interested to experience this, come in those 2 weeks. It will be a contemplative environment designed to induce our hope, a transformative experience in the viewer's consciousness by using the techniques of mandala, the techniques of sound vibration, of words in poetic form, of contemporary visual iconography, meaning translating ancient mythological icons or ancient messages, whether they came in the form of stone or manuscripts, and transforming them into a contemporary language of today's consciousness. Therefore, when you see Vartan, you'll see Vartan not depicted as he was 500 years ago. You will see Vartan depicted by a contemporary form of communication relevant to today. And with the inclusion of the mandala component in these various forms, all with the intention to nurture a deeper awareness, ultimately, a deeper connection to our ancestors, a deeper connection to our ancestral land and the heritage that is a treasure that sits there. And of course, by doing these things, we begin to understand the grander scope of the world that we live in. And that's why this is very much a universal experience. This is provoked by an event that happened 100 years ago to Armenians, but it is an event that mostly all humans and nations have experienced at some time or another. And on this level, genocide is a global conversation. And it's an important awareness to be raised to. And we are hoping that this installation will contribute on some level, no matter how small it may be, in a positive way, to greater awareness to the cause of prevention of genocide and through expanding a self-awareness towards it.
We kicked around many times the idea that, you know, okay, we're talking about genocide. And so there are those standard icons, pictures of genocide survivors, the mound of skulls, the woman bayoneted, and so on. And so you use these pictures, and it's going to incite some degree of hatred towards somebody. And so we've kicked around the idea of how do we get past that so that somebody coming to this installation isn't consumed by this negative thing. But at the same time, we have to stay focused to why we're doing this. We're doing this because there was a genocide. And like it or not, it is an ugly reality. So how do we move beyond that? And I think this is where the power of this installation is, that the people coming to this understand that there is a way beyond genocide. There is a life beyond genocide, and it begins with them. They have to be willing to take on that role of peacemaker. And I think this is the power of this installation. That when people come to this, it's not the usual standard, here's the genocide, too bad, let's move on. But here's the genocide, it is a tragedy, and can we look in the mirror and see that we are responsible for other genocides, And that's a big one to put on people, you know. I know that that's a tough one, but in the same sense, can we look in the mirror and see that, you know, if there is an answer to genocide, it begins with us.
Right. Well, you know, the question that you raised about how does one tell the story of genocide without nurturing the very behavioral symptoms that you're trying to prevent? Because, and this is one of the greatest challenges I faced in this project as a creator to construct messages to facilitate the antithesis of genocide, yet at the same time I'm telling with you a story about a history of a people.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you tell the story as a genocide survivor? How do you tell the story, whether it's to a friend or your child? How do you tell that story without contributing to the behavior that created that story in the first place?
Right.
Because, you know, not everybody draws the sword in a genocide. And the problem is the complicit nature of those surrounding the sword drawers because of the unfortunate moldability of the mind. And when you study genocide, you realize that this is an action caused through a nation. It is not the murderous acts of an individual. But how does a nation of people stand complicit to such factors? Well, these are the facts that men, and now when I say men, I mean all men, women, children. We are moldable, and by messages, wherever they come from, and we carry those as we get older. And they shape us. And here I am. Here's the contradictory dilemma. Here I am. This space is to be a prayer mantle for the departed. It's a walk through history to educate, because part of genocide prevention is education. But now here's the trick. How do you educate without inadvertently planting seeds of hate? Because when you show those photos of the starving children, the beheaded men, the rape, the pillage, the darkness, the degree of darkness, how do you keep that mind from starting to formulate a projection of hatred towards the contemporary people who share the same nation's name?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the danger, because we don't want to project. I mean, if we're going to be honest here about standing for, you know, not being in support of hate and not being in support of prejudice and not being in support of racism, being against genocide, how do we tell the story of genocide without inadvertently nurturing those very darknesses?
Yeah.
Because we're very susceptible behavior-wise.
Of course.
And so this, as an artist, telling the stories was one of the greatest challenges for me, is how do I tell the story? How do we tell the story? How do we share it? Because it's important, and justice is a very important component. It's been a very important component in my life. And how do you do it? And, well, we'll see, you know, the installation will be an expression of our the methods we approach, and people will go to see, and we will be able to feel how were we able to do it. And I'm feeling pretty good about the way we've tackled that challenge visually.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, how we, you know, portray starving children, and how can we, you know, educate those children, because there's gonna be a lot of youngsters coming to this installation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important they learn about the history, but it's also important for me that they learn to think critically. They learn to be aware of the projections they make on people, because ultimately, one day, these children are going to be in the places in society necessary to make the changes we all want. And I believe, and therefore, you know, this is an investment for me for 30 years down the road. You know, when these kids are in government, they're working at organizations, and they're going to be making decisions. And my hope is that they stand with the strength of wisdom to be able to manifest justice and peace at the same time without having contradictory internal dilemmas in their heart. Mm-hmm. And because I don't want to teach racism, I don't want to promote that.
I'm with you on that one.
And I'm still working it out myself, by the way. This is a work in progress, and I think that's what's most important. It's not a yes or no thing. It's a continual life process, just to, you know, not be an autopilot, right? Because the sheep follow. Remember, we saw in Armenia in the highlands, we saw 150 sheep. How do you organize it? Just by having a bushel of herbs in your hand, and the one main sheep follows you, and the rest follow. We need the children to be thinking so that if that sheep is walking in the wrong direction, they know to say, wait a minute, he's going to walk off a cliff. I'm turning the other way. Don't just follow blindly. Think about it is what I'm getting to, I guess, you know.
Greg, before we finish, I know that there's a component of this installation that that you want to get people to participate in, and there's going to be more opportunities for us to talk and kick around this, and I hope we'll make some time that we can talk and share these ideas again with our listeners. But for right now, how about immediately there is a need for the flags? How about if we tell the people about the flags and how they can participate in that?
Sure. So part of the idea of this installation is to create a connection with those who are coming, or even if those who can't be at the space, to be able to contribute to the energy in the space. And the way we are going to do that is by asking everyone to create what we're calling a peace flag. And essentially, it's a sheet of 8.5 by 11 white paper that everybody has. And you fold it in half lengthwise with the folded edge facing up. You just, on both sides of the paper, put your expression, express your dream of peace on that piece of paper. It can be words, it can be visuals, it can be whatever you want it to be and however you envision it to be. Color, black and white, photos, it doesn't matter. And the instructions, it's very simple to do, but there will be instructions just to show, make sure people fold the paper the right way and on what side to draw is the up and what side is the down. And by sending it to us, and the mailing addresses will be connected to the instructions. I guess it'll be on your site. But by sending that to us, it'll be attached into the installation and will be a very integrated component to the space. And we're looking forward to see the manifestation of all of these parts to in the whole, you know, the experience of what it will be as a whole, you know. And then we're expecting to get flags from all over the world, which is really exciting.
We will put it on our website with the show notes today. So those of you listening, just go to the show notes and there'll be a link on there and you'll be able to check it out. Hey, Greg, thank you so much for making this time today. I know you got to get back to the creative process. And
Thank you, Father Vasquez. And probably
next few weeks, we'll do this again, okay?
Sounds great. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Take care.
Okay, take care.
This is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that reminder. You know, along with that, I want to say that this podcast, all of these broadcasts are really experiments in faith, really. I appreciate all of your well wishes, your emails, the reflections that you send to me about how this podcast, how this ministry is touching you. Appreciate your donations, but most importantly, I appreciate your prayers for this, because I know that there's a higher power that's involved in these podcasts. And I want to just let you know that your prayers don't go unanswered. I don't know how things work out sometimes, but they do. And that's what I mean by an experiment in faith. Experimenting and knowing that our faith is really strong. It is moving forward. And don't think that we don't have our doubts. We have our doubts. But what Susie says, it's made possible because of your donations and your prayers. That is so true. In fact, in the coming weeks, we're looking forward to a new podcast. You know that during the Lenten season, over the last few years, I've put together a 40-day podcast. The first year we did the Lenten experience. Last year we did 40 Days of Healing, and all of these podcasts reside on our website. They are there for the download. They are free of charge. They're made available to you wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's on iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, wherever you find them, you'll find them there. Okay, so, and of course, at the Apostle website, at the In Issues website. But we're looking forward to doing a new 40-day series dedicated to the Divine Liturgy, or the Holy Badarak. It's 40 days of the Holy Badarak, instructional, meditative. And let me tell you, if you think that that is just reserved for the Armenian Church, for Orthodoxy, for the Roman Catholic Church, if you think that it's just available for the Christian, you're wrong. The Divine Liturgy is a human experience. It is an experience that connects us to something greater than ourselves. And so I'm inviting you to get involved in that one. That one should premiere February 16th, if all goes well, the first day of Lent. We're scheduling a 40-day session for that, and looking forward to that. So I hope you will, too. You'll look forward to it on our website. Hey, I want to call it a day today. I thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed the interview, and there will be more to come in the weeks to come. So for the wonderful team who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazgen inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.